We are. Tessamit Olive, 9A.
Second line. Yeah.
Second line. The middle of a sequence of comments from Rav Yehuda citing Rav. We have five altogether, and we saw two already on the previous Amud. And there's quite a bit to say about this. The ratio of footnotes to outline is high today. So the Gemara begins with the Omer of Yehuda Omer. Rav of Yehuda also said, citing Rav, Talmud Chacham Tzarech Sheyelumod Gimel Devarim. Talmud Chacham must learn three things. What are they? Ksav, number one. Ksav literally means writing. We'll come back to that in a moment. Shechita and Mila. Umila. So the question is what exactly we're talking about here. What does that mean? That Talmud Chacham must know these things. So first of all, knowing Rashi is a little bit ambiguous on what we mean here by knowing things. What exactly is it that we are requiring? The Maharsha makes it clear though, and I think it's implicit in Rashi also, that it's talking about practice. It isn't just that he has to know how to do these things, but he has to be able physically to perform them. So, ksav, what do you assume when you say ksav? Right.
He shall know to sign his name.
Sorry?
He shall know to sign his name.
So you're cheating. You read Rashi. Rashi says ksav is lichtov sheyeda lachtom shemo ilu yeshiv bedin oleidus. He has to know how to write, so that he can sign his name. It's a remarkable standard for a Talmud Chacham. Lends itself to the idea that this is about physical practice rather than simply knowing, intellectually the formation of the letters, but it's about actually doing it. And that's supported by Rashi on Shechita, where he says, La'amein yado l'kach afilu shabaki b'choseha. It isn't enough for him to know the rules, it's that he can physically perform it. Practicing is not so easy, right? Those who can't do teach, or something along those lines. No offense to people who teach, that wasn't intended as a serious statement. Very much so. But the idea is that he should be able to carry it out, as the Maharsha says. However, ksav, according to the Maharsha, means what I would have thought it meant when I read the word ksav, which is safras. It isn't about it assigned his name. It's about stam, sefer tefillin, mezuzah. That's what we're talking about here. So he has to know these things. When we say he has to know these things, the Maharsham says these aren't requirements. It's midas chasidus. He should know these things, and he based it on the Rambam's perush in Gittin, in Parag Vav, Mishnah Zayin in Gittin, where he says that the dayanim on the Beis Din Hagadol had to be chachamim, not sofrim. So writes the Rambam. So it's clear that it isn't a firm requirement. You don't qualify to sit on a Beis Din unless you can do these things, but this is what we're supposed to be looking for. Rav Hanani bar Shlamya, Mishmei de Rav, Omer Av Kesher Shal Tfilin Uberchas Chasanim Betzitzis. Three more items. Rav Hanani bar Shlamya adds three items in the name of Rav. One is Kesher Shal Tfilin, how to tie the knot on Tfilin. And when we say this, Rashi explains he means the knots that are supposed to be in the shapes of the letters of Shin, Dalet, and Yud. That's what Rashi says we're talking about. The Tosfos says that this is proof that you don't tie the knot on your tefillin daily. Remember, we talked about this back in Menachos. When we talk about kshira, tying on the tefillin, it means fastening it to the head. That's all that we're talking about. How do I know that? Because of the next line in the Gemara. But in any case, tying the tefillin means those knots. Ubirkas chasanim, as well as the brachas under the chuppah, v'tzitzis, as well as knowing how to tie tzitzis. V'idach, why weren't those on the list from Koyt of Yehuda citing Rav? Why didn't you list these three? And his answer is Hani Shchichan, because we only listed those that are more common. So Rabbeinu Tam says, you're telling me tying the knot on the tefillin is not that common. That shows you're not retying the knots every day. Even though the Torah says Ukshartam. Ukshartam simply means that you have to put it tight on the head. So that's our third comment from Rav Yehuda citing Rav, is that the Talmud Chacham should know those three areas. Okay. Then we get the fourth. V'am Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel, kol tabach she'eino yodea hilchos shchita, asur le'achol mishchita so. He says, a butcher, and by butcher here we mean the shochet, needs to know hilchos shchita, or else you can't eat from his shchita. Ve'eluhen, and here are the five, the classic five, Ve'elu einecha shechita, shehiya drasa chalada hagrama v'ikur. Shehiya is pausing during the shechita. Drasa is pressing down on the simanim, on the trachea and the esophagus, instead of slicing across. Chalada is tunneling in with the knife so that you're cutting from between the simanim. Hagrama is you're supposed to cut between two cartilage rings, upper and lower, and the person veers out from between them. And then ikur. Ikur is actually a problem. Rashi says ikur means splitting the gargaret instead of slicing it. That's the statement that Rashi brings. If you take a look at Rashi on Shehiya Drasa Chalada Hagrama the ikur, he goes through them quickly. But for Ikor, where was the line? He said, Pasak HaGargeres. So that means splitting the Gargeres. What in the world does that mean? So the Rush explains, he means tearing it. If you have a knife that has a pagam, that has a flaw in it, so you end up tearing the esophagus instead of slicing it properly. The Bahag, on the other hand, offers what we usually understand Ikor to be, and that is that the trachea, the esophagus, is actually embedded in the flesh and attached to the flesh in the neck. And if it gets pulled out of the flesh, that's ikur. Even though it wouldn't make it a trefa, nonetheless it disqualifies the shechita. So that's the idea. Your shochet, it isn't enough that your shochet can physically do things right. He has to know these rules. So he'll know what kind of questions to ask. So the Gemara says, "My kamash malan, what are you teaching me here? Kulu tanani taninu. We learned all these things in the Mishnah. We said that the shochet has, that these things could disqualify a shechita. Lo tzricha sheshachal lefanenu beis v'gimel pa'amim v'shachal shapir. The answer is, my concern is a case in which the shochet actually shafted two or three times in front of us. We already saw this the other day, and we said two or three times, depending on how you define chazaka. But he shafted a few times in front of us, and his shechita was fine. So ma'u desema midi'idoch shachal shapir, hainami shachal shapir. I would assume, perhaps, he shafted those other times, and it was fine. He has a chazaka. And therefore, any time he shafts, I assume it's done fine. Kamash malan came into logomar zimnin deshoy v'daris v'lo yada, and it teaches us that it's not so, because sometimes in his shechita he might do shehiya or drasa, something that you can't actually pick out when you look at it in the aftermath. You can't look at the neck and say, oh, that was a shehiya. You're not going to know unless someone is actually watching the deed closely. And no one is going to know, so therefore he has to know the rules. The Mordechai quotes the Urayim on this saying, it isn't that he has to know every detail about it. He has to know the basic points. Because even the Chacham don't know every detail because they're machloksin, right? It's not that he has to know every last fine point, but he has to have a basic familiarity with these issues. So that's the fourth statement from Rabbi Yehuda. This was actually Rabbi Yehuda citing Shmuel, not Rabbi Yehuda citing Rav. I noted it in the sheet as Rabbi Yehuda citing Rav. I have to correct that. Because remember, Rabbi Yehuda learned from both. Rabbi Yehuda learned from Rav, and he also went to learn from Shmuel. So there is. It's, right. Yeah, today it's called Kabbalah. Not just today, but in general it's called Kabbalah, that he is received as somebody who's able to shout properly, and it comes with practical. He has to do a practical act of shechita. It isn't just that he demonstrates knowledge of the halakhas. He needs both. Yeah. Okay. So we get our fifth statement from Rav Yehuda, and again, this one is also citing Shmuel, not citing Rav. And that is Velma Rav Yehuda Shmuel, Hatavok Tzav Shayivdok Bisimanim La'achar Shechita. The butcher is required to check the simanim after, the butcher meaning the shochet, after he does the shechita. It isn't sufficient that he does the shechita and says, I know I did the act right. He actually must check the simanim. What does that mean? So the Magid Mishnah quotes the Bahag, explaining that what it means is he has to check that it wasn't pulled while the animal was alive, that the simanim were not pulled away from the flesh, like we talked about in Ikur, while the animal was still alive. He says that's what the way that the Bahag explains it. However, he then says that most posts can disagree with the Bahag and say that's not what you're checking. What you're checking is simply that the majority of each simon was cut. That you cut most of the way through the trachea, most of the way through the esophagus. And that's what the Rush writes here as well. So Rav Yehuda is saying, the Shochet has to go back and take a look. It isn't enough that he says, I know how to do an act of Shechita and I know this one went right. He has to physically pull out the trachea and the esophagus and examine them. So, Amar Rav Yosef, Avana Nami Taneina. Rav Yosef says, I can prove this to you because I learned the following. We learned the following. Rabbi Shimon Omer im Shah Kidei Bikur. In a separate discussion, they're talking about the law of Shehiya. One of the disqualifications is pausing when you're doing the Shechita. So, how long is pausing? You say he paused. Well, what defines a hesitation? What defines a pause? So they say, if he paused long enough to examine. So once you tell me that there's a length of time called long enough to examine, that means there's such a thing as examination. So that must mean that there is a requirement for examination. Otherwise, what is your shear that you're defining? So my lav kedei bikur simanin. Doesn't that mean the length of time to investigate, check the trachea, the esophagus, the way that we defined? So Amalei Abaye lo, to which Abaye says not necessarily. There are other things that are termed, other actions that are termed investigation. Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so said Rabbi Yochanan, kidei bikur chacham. The time for a chacham to check, and what he means, as Rashi says, is libdok hasakin, to check the knife. Because the rule is, as the Gemara is going to say tomorrow, that you're supposed to show the sakin, you're supposed to show the knife to the local authority before checking. It's not only a matter of your shechita being kosher, but out of kavod to the chacham. So you're supposed to show him the knife and ask him, is this knife acceptable? So so that's what we meant with kedei bikur. That isn't evidence that we have to check the trachea and the esophagus. So the Gemara has a problem, though. If that's really your shear, the length of time it takes to go to the chacham, that's going to vary by your locale. It depends on how far away the chacham is. In kein nasata devarecha l'shiurim, the Gemara challenges. You've then left yourself open to saying, well, in this city your shehiyah is this long, in this city your shehiyah is that long. Ela kedei bikur tava chacham. So he modifies the answer. The answer is that if the shochet himself is the reigning authority in the city, the length of time it would take him personally to look at the knife. That's what we mean. So that's the shear for shehiya, for delay, and not the shear for checking the simanim in the neck. So therefore, when Rav Yehuda says, citing Shmuel, that there's an obligation to check the simanim in the neck, that you can't support that from this comment, from the source on kedei bikur, because it means a different type of a bikur. That's the idea. That doesn't mean we reject Rav Yehuda's statement citing Shmuel. It just means we don't have a source to back it up.
Why isn't the knife as important as these other things, like pausing and...
It is as important. What do you mean?
But it's not listed.
Because he's going to have to check it with a chacham. Right? In other words, the shochet doesn't need to be an expert regarding the knife, because he's obligated to show it to the chacham, and the chacham is going to tell him whether this is good or not.
Who sharpens the knife?
Right, so he's supposed to do the sharpening, and then show it to the chacham, who will say kasher or treif. The truth of the matter is that that is part of what we require for a shochet.
That's what I'm saying.
We do require that the shochet actually know how to check his knife.
The knife has to be part of Kabbalah also.
Yes, that's true. But he's proposing a situation in which it's being checked. The truth of the matter is it's very problematic. Because we talk about, you'll see in the Gemara, the issue of needing to check between shechitos potentially if it hits a bone, and then the fear that it got a pagam when it struck a bone. So it's not so straightforward, you're right. But here, at least, we're not listing it as one of your obligations.
But the chacham not around, so what? Happening with the shechita, that's a mitzvah.
Right, the chacham can't go on vacation. If the chacham goes on, the only time he can go on vacation is during the 9 days. At that point, he can go on vacation. But you're right. You need to have someone available who's going to be the authority for checking the knives.
Well, you know, it's only Al-Khabar Rav who's saying it. Right?
Well, assuming that you have someone who physically knows, who can actually do it. In other words, the fact that I have to go to the chacham ha'ir, you're right, is covered because he's the chacham ha'ir. But I need some chacham.
Well, we're saying the Talmud knows the halachah shechita already, right?
Right, but we only listed those five psulim. We didn't list checking the knife. That was just like...
No, that's easy, the knife check, looking at it.
No, it's not just looking at it. The way they used to check it, the way they still do, actually, when they do Kabbalah, is they actually put a flaw in a knife, and they challenge the shochet to find the flaw. I always felt they should do that with Arab checkers. But it's a dangerous game. You test your Arab checker by actually doing something to disqualify. Say, here, do the check now. Tell me what you find. Okay.
Why do they check after the shechita? Why not before the shechita?
No, the knife is before. The knife is before.
Well,
the
biggest simanim
is checking to make sure you slice them properly. You can't check that before. So the Gemara is not done with this statement in the series, though. The Gemara wants to know, okay, you're telling me we have to check the simanim. What if he didn't check the simanim? Now what? Is it really a pasul shechita? Lo badak mai, we're in the middle of the page on Testament Aleph. Rabbi Eliezer ben Antignos mishum Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yanai Omar Trefa Basura Bakila. He says it is in fact trefa. And when we say trefa here, we don't mean trefa in the strict sense. To say that it's a trefa, because our requirement was not that it should be checked for simani trefa. Our requirement was only that you should check to make sure that you cut it, that you cut it properly. So in any case, it is not kosher. Vasura ba'achila. Actually, no. The way he's rendering it is trefa mamush. I'm sorry, I have to correct that. He says we treat it as an animal that was a trefa that got shechted, meaning vasura ba'achila. You're not allowed to eat it, but it's not tame. B'masnisa tana, in a brisa we learned, nevela. We treat it as nevela, an animal that was not shechted properly, and therefore umetama b'masa. It's going to communicate tuma to anybody who carries it. B'maikamiflagi, what's the machlokas about here in terms of the degree to which we reject this animal? B'derahuna. The debate is within a comment of Rav Huna, the Amar Rav Huna, because Rav Huna said, "Behema the Rav Huna there is thrown in by the Bach, behema b'chayeha b'chezkas isur omedes, ashi vadalacha b'manishchata." The rule is that an animal has a chazaka that it's aser to you, right? While the animal is still alive, the animal is ever menachai, right? We talked about that yesterday in terms of what happens to the knife. Until you know that it was shechted properly. Nishchata, once it's already shechted, harei b'chezkas heter. Once you know the shechita was kasher, we assume that the animal was fine, ashi vadal chava menitrefa, until you see that it has a mark of a trefa. But our point is the first half of that statement. That while it's alive, the chazak is that it's usher. So Mar Savar one says, Bechezkas iser kaima v'hashta mesehi. One view is that the chazak is that it's usher, right, from when it was alive, and therefore it was a nevela, and therefore, now it's dead, it's a nevela, and therefore it's tame. It's not just usher, but it's actually tame. Umar Savar, Bechezkas Isser Amrinan, Bechezkas Tuma Lo Amrinan. Right, the opposing view is all you said is Chezkas Isser. We treat it as a trefa that got shechted, and therefore you're not allowed to eat it. However, we don't say that it's going to be Tame. As Rashi notes, Basar Min Hachai doesn't communicate Tuma. That's the idea. So the upshot is, if you didn't check it, we have this machlokas, whether we're going to go with Tuma or whether we're going to say it's just Usser. That's the idea. But we're not done with Rav Huna now. Now that you quoted me, Rav Huna, I have a follow-up question for you. Gufa, Amar Rav Huna, Behema Bechaya, Bechezkas Yisra Omedes, Hashivada Lachaba Menishchata. We say that the animal is assumed to be usher until you find out that it was shechted properly. Nishchata, once you know it was shechted properly, Bechezkas Heter Omedes. Now, we treat it as assumed mutter, Hashivada Lachaba Menitrefa, until you know how exactly it became a trefa, until you find the signs of a trefa. End of quote. So you says, Volema Nishchata Hutra, why didn't you just say, once it's shechted, it's mutter? What did you need this whole verbiage of chazaka? Chazaka sounds like there's some kind of uncertainty involved, and we're going to go with this, you know, there's a suffix here. Hakamash Malan is teaching us, Da'af Agav De'isilid Bah Reyasa. Even if some Reyasa develops, some sign that it wasn't done properly develops, I have some concern. Nonetheless, we assume mutter until we can prove it's aser. What kind of a reyasa? Kedeba mine Rabbi Abba me Rav Huna. Like Rabbi Abba asked Rav Huna. Baze'e v'natal b'nei me'ayim amahu. What if a wolf came along, it took the innards of the animal you just shechted and ran away, so now you can't check them for signs of a trefa? So, what do you do with this animal? So, my answer is going to be, you did a proper shechita, we assume the animal was fine. To which the Gemara says, Natal, it took them halasnu. What do you mean? They're not here. There is no reyasa. Right? That's not a reyasa. That's just an inability to check. But I have no reason to assume there's something wrong. Ela nikav b'nei me'ayim mahu. To which he says, okay, we're talking about where there's a hole in the innards. So that's where I'm saying we rely on the chazaka. So she says, but what chazaka would you rely on? He says,
the wolf made it possible.
Why do you assume that?
Well, put a hole in it so now you don't have
that. No, well, I don't even, it doesn't matter. It doesn't make it, it could be that case, it doesn't have to be. There doesn't have to be any wolf involved. The point is, I found a puncture in the B'nai Me'ayim, and Mahu, what's the rule? And I'm going to rely on the Chazaka. To which the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Nika, Hakachazinan Dun? I'm sorry, no, it is the wolf. You're right. You're 100% right. It's where the wolf did the puncturing of it. So the Gemara says, but who cares? We saw the wolf do it, so therefore we know it wasn't a treifa. Rather, the case is the wolf ran off with them, and then the wolf brought them back. They decided they didn't want guts today. The wolf left the innards. He found the innards, and now they have a hole in them. Mao, what's the rule? Mi'chay shin and shabav makom nekev nakav. Although, do I worry that the puncture that it made was in the place where the innards had been punctured before, and therefore really it was a treifa? Or do I say no? Obviously, this hole came from this wolf, and there was no other hole in it, and that's where Rav Huna wants to say that we rely on the chazaka, the shechita was proper. We don't worry that maybe it bit into it where there was already a bite, or where there was already a hole, and therefore it wouldn't be, any good. That's the answer. So again, the key point here, the Rav Yehuda said, citing Shmuel, that the shochet has to check the simanim. If you didn't check the simanim, I have a machlokas, whether it's a treifa, whether it's a tamea. We quote Rav Huna as saying that once you know the animal is shechted properly, the animal is becheskes heter. If you don't know the animal is shechted properly, it's becheskes iser. And we debated whether they meant tumah or not, but our last point is what's going to carry us forward. Rav Huna said, once you know it was shechted properly, we assume that everything is fine. So now the Gemara is going to discuss just how much you're willing to rely on a chazaka, and the issue of sakana, the issue of danger. Esrei, the Gemara challenges and says, really? You're willing to rely on the fact that this animal was shechted properly to then say, and therefore I assume it wasn't a treifa. We're told that if you see a bird pecking away at figs, or a mouse makes a hole in a melon. In those cases, we are worried there may have been a snake bite in that melon, in that fig, before the bird came along, before the mouse came along, and therefore, not only is it gross, because frankly you had a mouse eating the melons, but it's actually dangerous as a result of the snake. So I don't understand. You just told me that we can assume that the wolf made the hole fresh. I don't worry that the wolf bit it in a place where there already was a hole. Then why over here am I worried that the bird or the mouse bit into this thing where there was a hole from a snake? So Amarle, to which he replied, because those are two separate considerations. You only asked me about concern that the animal might be a treifa. What's the end of the world if the animal's a treifa? You broke the law. Okay, so we have rules about that. And the rule is, in a makom safek, we don't need to be concerned. However, in the case of the snake bite, that's already danger. And you can say from today until tomorrow, you know, when it comes to a dangerous situation, you can say, but I followed the rules. And the rules are, suffake, you don't have to worry about, then bittul and all that. And the answer is, you're still dead. It doesn't help you when it's sakana. You broke this isn't going to save you when you say, but I played by the rules. Amalei, mika madamis yisura la sakanta. He says, you're comparing yisur and sakana. Sakana shani. Sakana is different. The Malach HaMavas doesn't care about bittul b'shishim. And that's the answer. So Amar Le Rava, to which Rava says, Maishna Safek Sakanta Lachumra. Rava says, why? You tell me Safek Sakana, we're gonna be strict. Safek Yisur Nami Lachumra. We do the same thing with Safek Yisur, right? Safek Daraisa Lachumra. So Amar Le Abaye, to which Abaye says, come on. Velo Shani Ben Yisur La Sakanta, we don't distinguish between Yisur and Sakana. Perhaps Rava should really be Rava there, since it's Abaye challenging him. That's unusual. But Abaye says, you don't accept the idea that we distinguish between Isser and Sakana? Of course you do. Of course you have to. You have to accept that. And I'll prove it to you. If you're not sure about Tumah in a public place, the contraction of Tumah that may have taken place in public, the rule is Tahor. Whereas if you have a Suffolk that water may have been left uncovered, and a snake may have got, or some water was left uncovered, covered and a snake may have gotten into it, the rule is usur. So you see, You see that they that clearly we distinguish in Isser and Sakana. This is technically our second case in which we're discussing this. Our first case was the case where the mouse or the bird made a hole in something. That, and there we saw suffix Sakana, we're going to be Machmir. Now we're going to see a second case here where a suffix Mayim Megulin, and you compare it with suffix Tuma. So Amar Lei, to which Rava or Rabba replies, Hasam Hilchasa Gemirila Misota. He says that's a different story because that law that by suffix Tuma versus Harabim we're going to be lenient, that's actually Hilchasa Gemirila technically is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. We don't really mean that here. As Rashi says, it's actually Xeris HaKasuv. It's learned from Sukkim, from Vinistra, Vihinitma, from Sota. Right? And we say, Ma Sota versus Hayachid, a woman can only become a Sota if Vinistra, she is alone in private with the person she was not supposed to be alone with. Avtuma versus Hayachid, so too, Safek, just like by the Sota, it's Safek. And we assume Nitma'a, so too, by Tuma and Rishus Hayachid, we assume Nitma'a. But only in Rishus Hayachid, Safek Tuma and Rishus Rabim doesn't communicate Tuma. So that, so don't tell me that the reason why we're strict regarding uncovered water, but we're lenient regarding suffix tuma. Don't tell me that that's because we're more strict by sakana. That's not the reason. The reason why is because tuma is learned from sota, and that's a quirky case. Masiv Rav Simi. So Rav Simi says, okay, fine, I'll bring it to you. Sheretz befi chulda. V'chulda malachas agabe kikaros shel truma. There is a chulda walking along carrying a creepy crawly creature in its mouth. A creepy crawly creature that communicates tuma. The chulda, this rodent, walks by, walks on even, pieces of bread that are truma. Safek naga, safek lo naga. And the question is, did the sheretz actually touch the truma? We know the chulda did. The question is, did the sheretz? The chulda isn't communicating any tuma. So the rule is, sveko tahor. We assume tahor. Vilu safek mayim megulin asurin. Whereas when you're dealing with the water case, the water that was left uncovered, we assume asur. So doesn't that prove that we're more strict by sakana? To which he says, no, hasam nami, hilchasa gemiru lami sota. That also is deduced from sota. What do you mean? Ma sota davashiyesh badas lishoil. The suffix by sota involves a woman who could answer the question. She has intelligence. She's able to reply, did something happen or didn't it happen? She says, no, nothing happened. We actually have, by sota, regarding the sota, we have the possibility of asking. So too, regarding tuma, we only assume that something is tame, that something happened, if there's a possibility of asking questions. Here, there is no possibility of asking questions because it's a chulda. Try asking a chulda a question. That doesn't get you very far. And that's why the law is different there. And it's not really about suffix tuma or iser versus suffix sakana. So that doesn't prove anything. So the Gemara brings you one more case, and in this case, we will find the proof.
Rashi says the bread is engas. Why did Rashi say on the bread, not on the chulda?
Because the bread is all we care about. The bread's the truma. Oh, you mean the bread isn't the way, it doesn't have intelligence?
Maybe
because that makes it truly parallel to the sota.
Or maybe just means the case of kibra.
Maybe, but I think it makes sense. It's parallel, right? The bread is what would be tame, just like the sota is the one who would become tame, right? So I think the parallel is there. It's the bread that can't be asked. And you know what? That actually has to be. I'm sorry. It has to be, because there's a parallel case that we discussed regarding a baby, right? When the baby is playing, and the question is, did the baby touch the dough, right? It's the dough that can't answer the questions. So it makes sense. Okay. Amar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi says, Tashma, come in here from the following case. Tzlochus sheinicha megula, uba umitza mechusa. The case here is water that's prepared for the para aduma. Okay? It's mayim chayim, which doesn't yet have the ash put into it. It doesn't have the ash in it. So the water is sitting in the jug. Sheinicha megula, and somebody somewhere was foolish enough to leave it uncovered with all the pains they go to get mayim chayim al keli. Remember all that? About the kid, and the kid is raised in a certain place, and he can't become tamei and use the clay Evan and all of that. Someone left the water uncovered. That was very good. Uba umitza mechusa. He left the room and then he came back and he found that it was covered. Tameya. Why? Shani Omer. Adam tamei nichnas l'sham v'kisa. We assume that the water is no good because we assume that somebody came in and covered it up. Hinicha machusa. What if you left it covered? Uba umitzah magula, and then you came in and found it uncovered. Im yechola chulda lishtos mimena. If a rodent would have been able to access it and to drink from it, o nachash ladibur Rabban Gamliel, or according to Rabban Gamliel, a snake could have gotten in and drunk from it and therefore poisoned it. O sheyarad batal balayla, or dew descended into it at night. And that's going to disqualify because it's no longer mayim chayim. The psula, it's no good. There's some debate as to what the issue would be regarding this chulda that managed to disqualify it. What's my issue here? Rashi brings me two approaches. One approach is that when the chulda drinks from the water, it's like the water was used for malacha, for work, and mayim chayim can't have been used for work. The second approach in Rashi, though, and Tosfos as well, is that it's not Mayim Chayim El Keli, because the cat, or the rodent in this case, drinks the water, laps the water up, and then some of it goes back in. It doesn't drink everything. Some of it is backwashed back into the water, and that's no longer Mayim Chayim El Keli. It's water that's now been... No, it's not mikvah water. Mayim Chayim El Keli is unique. It's Mayon. It's from a spring straight into the clay. It's not. If mikvah water is puzzle for mechadas. So that's our consideration here. The point for us is that over there, in that case, we say puzzle. V'am Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi matam, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said why? Mipnei tapa yidamad alef mipnei shadarkan shal shrotzim legalos ve'darkan lechasos. Could is the way of creepy crawly creatures that they uncover things, and they don't cover things up. So therefore, in the case in which he came along and found that someone had covered it up, I assume it's not a sheretz. Right? I assume you're talking about people, and there are people who are tummy, there are people who are tahor, and I have to assume maybe it was done by a tummy person. Whereas, the point is that you go with rove. We're willing to go by the rove of entities who may have done this, both Lakula and Lachumra. We'd be willing to go either way. I'm jumping the parentheses. The ilu safek mayim megulim asurin. Whereas regarding water that was left uncovered, not mechatas, but water you want to drink, we treat it as asur. Shma minach amira sakanta meisura. You see that sakana is stricter than isur. Shma minach. That is evidence that we are more strict regarding danger than we are regarding isurim. It's not awesome. We have to wrap up this discussion about Gilui I don't think so. I think the difference is because we want to show that it will be Lakula. No, his point isn't the Tamea part. His point is that we're willing to go with.
No, because we said when it was uncovered. Covered and you found it uncovered, it's only psula, but it's not tmeya. But when it was uncovered and you found it covered, you're assuming that a person did it, and then you're saying it's tmeya.
Right.
So you're involved in that case.
Right, the fact that we didn't say tmeya. Okay, I hear you. And that's what Rashi sounds like on the top of Daf Yud. It could have been a person, but since it could also be the shrotzim, we're going to go by the rove. I hear that. Thank you. So the Gemara continues regarding the issue of gilui, of uncovered liquids. Tanan Hasa, Mishnah says, Gimel mashkin asurin mishum gilui. Three types of liquid are asur if you left them uncovered. Mayim is water, v'yayin wine, v'chalav and milk. Kama yishuviyu asurin, how long do they have to be left uncovered? Kedisha yeza arachash mimakum karo v'yishta. Long enough that a snake, a creepy, crawly creature, literally is a rachash, but we mean here a snake, as Rashi notes, could have left a nearby place and drunk from it. The kama makum karov, what do you mean by a nearby place? So Amar Yitzchak, Breiner of Yehuda, Kedisha Yitzchak, Mitachas Ozen, Kli V'yishta. Enough time that it could have come out from under the handle of the Kli and drunk from it. To which the Gemara says, wait a minute, drinking? Yishta, hakachazile. Then I could see it. I would see it when it was on its way back into its hole, if it took that much time. I'm sorry, because you just said enough time for it to come out from under and drink. So, Ella yishta v'yavzer l'choro. You're right, it will be a length of time that it could drink and get back into the hole. I note that Tosos in Beitza, Davavam and Aleph, I gave you the reference on your sheet to look up. The Tosos there raises doubts about whether we're concerned about Gilui in places where you don't have snakes running around, so to speak. The Rambam brings the Isser, but the Shulchan Aruch in the beginning of Yerodeh Kuvtei Zayin says, if you live in a place where there are no snakes, Gilui is not a consideration. Oh, that's what I'm saying. Okay.